Time now for our NHL Insider. It's Matthew Barnaby, NHL analyst, brought to you by McAlpine Ford Lincoln in Aurora. Good morning, Matthew.
Great segue, guys. I'm real excited to be jumping on this.
Yeah,
show
I know.
Right after that
one. I know. So we'll go right to the ice, right to the ice last night, and not the snow. We'll go right to the ice in Buffalo last night. We can do that for you.
It was a pretty good. You know what I mentioned earlier this morning. I don't think that I've leaned towards no fighting in hockey, but yet I still enjoy a hockey fight. I don't know how to work through that. Beaulieu and Martin knew it was going to be a good one because Beaulieu can throw them if you haven't seen this guy before. But I wonder about hockey fights and the effect, the real effect. Does it change how a team plays when a guy on your team gets into a fight?
Absolutely, 100%. And I know that we don't see them very much anymore. And there's the naysayers that would love to see it out of the game. But I guarantee you, there's no one that went to go to the washroom when those two started throwing hands last night. And Beaulieu can throw them. For those that don't know, he can throw them. And Martin's obviously not afraid to drop them with anyone in the league. It was a terrific fight. But it can change the momentum of a game. You're not going to see it much in the playoffs, and that's where maybe the value of a Martin kind of gets diminished a little bit because we just don't see it. We don't see that part of the game anymore and trying to change the momentum that way in maybe a playoff game. But certainly during a regular season, you feel a little bit more comfortable with a guy like him on your team. And I said this last week, my son got in his first ever fight, and I was nauseous to my stomach and hate to see your own kid do what you did. But when other people are doing it, it's not bad to watch once in a while.
What do you think the Sabres do in net next year? I didn't like it's nothing against Robin Leonard, but I didn't like the transaction. I hated giving up a first-round pick for such an unproven player. I thought that was just a knee-jerk panic reaction. You can get those guys in free agency sometimes. But he's an RFA. Are the Sabres stepping free and clear, or are they going in and getting on one knee and giving him a ring for the long term? What do you think they do here with the RFA Robin Leonard?
My guess is there's only one thing that they can do, and that's walk away with him. I think his qualifying offer is, you know, about $4.3 million roughly in that area. And I'm with you. When they gave up a first rounder for Robin Leonard, I was like, oh, God, this is not the best thing you could do for a team in the rebuild. Go with a younger goalie. And then they could have picked up a goalie at that point or went with a younger. They were still in a total rebuild. But Tim Murray drafted Robin Lehner from Ottawa, so I think he felt that he knew enough about him to be a starter in the National Hockey League, and that's who he wanted to start his franchise, or at least his tenure with the Buffalo Sabres. But I'm with you. I thought it was an awful play from the start, and I'd be very, very, very surprised if Robin Lehner was in a Buffalo Sabres uniform next year.
How do we assess Phil Housley as a National Hockey League coach's first season? Very difficult to step in. It's clear that guys like him. Is he going to be a good coach going forward, and is it fair to assess a guy with the talent he has right now?
No, it isn't. I mean, you know, Scotty Bowman got fired from the Buffalo Sabres in back in the day, and then he's went on to do great things. I think Phil Housley is very well liked. I think he's a very capable coach. He was very well liked in his time with the Nashville Predators. He's done great things with USA Hockey. It's unfair. This isn't a National Hockey League team roster, and when you look at what they have there on any given night, it's tough for any coach to go in. It wasn't Dan Bylsma's fault. They tried to make him out to be the fault of that team. Unfortunately, they just don't have enough depth on the back end. The goaltending hasn't been good enough, and they have a lot of young forwards. So this team is not ready to compete yet. I said it years ago that it was going to be a five-year rebuild. I didn't think it would be an eight-year rebuild, but certainly it's on track to be at least a four more years before this team really competes at all or even has the opportunity to compete with the likes of the Torontos and the Bostons and the Tampa Bays in the Eastern Conference.
Matthew Barnaby, our guest. So the last two nights for JVR, five goals in two games, and it's been a while, Matthew. I'm sure you've played with teammates, star players, first-line players, and you've said to teammates or you've said it out loud, boy, it's going to be unpopular if and when we can't bring this player back. There has to be a way, and I'm not sure what that way is. I can get really creative and talk about all the ways, but James Van Riemsdyk leaving at age 29 after potentially a 35-goal season, and we don't know how his playoffs are going to be. Maybe that'll tell the tale as to how popular or unpopular it is. The Leafs have pinned themselves in. When they signed Patrick Marleau July 1st, I applauded that. I thought that was a great moment that someone would choose to be in Toronto after 19 years somewhere else, and yet his contract, Zaitsev's contract, those may be the two that make it impossible to bring this guy back.
I agree with you on the Marleau, and I think he's done nothing to discredit that signing. He's been a great leader on that team and a team that desperately needed some veteran leadership. Unfortunately, that contract is going to cost you re-signing a guy like Van Riemsdyk that's had a career year that really, you know, flies under the radar with all the star power up front that Toronto has. He flies under the radar, but all he does is score goals, but without even a contract being discussed. And I've heard that for a long, long time, that numbers have never even been good. Even thought about going forward. So it's inevitable that they will lose him. It's tough, and I've been in that situation with guys before that you know that they are going to leave, that either a team can't afford them, and that's certainly going to be the case because he's going to garner a hefty contract from someone else, making it impossible to sign there, I believe, only because of the contracts with the young guys, the Marners and the Nylanders and the Matthews going forward. It's going to be very tough to spend another big contract up front long-term, because that's what he's going to want in Toronto Maple Leafs.
Our NHL insiders, Matthew Barnamy, we saw injury last night to Leo Komarov, and obviously depth. You want as many players healthy when you get to the playoffs as possible. Thinking about this team without Leo, if that were to occur, what's his worth? What's his importance to this team going to the playoffs?
It's big, and I think we look at him, and we look at the scoring all the time, and we're like, oh my God, like, how does he play up on in top 6 minutes sometimes and play with the big guys sometimes? But his value is way beyond that. When you get into playoff time and you need guys to chip pucks out and chip pucks in and be reliable defensively, add a physical element, because we know in a 7-game series, it's not always about just winning that one game. It's about winning a series and wearing teams down. He has that ability, and he has that ability to piss people off and take penalties on them. It's way beyond the statistical. So certainly Mike Babcock likes him for a reason, because he brings a valuable role. Long-term, it would be, I don't want to say impossible to win without him, because that's not the case, but it would be a blow. But looking at the injury, I think he's going to be fine. It didn't look like it was as bad as when he went off. And hopefully for Toronto, hopefully for that team, he'll be all right and be back there soon.
Yeah, I listen to you both, you guys, and I see the value of it. And yet I'd probably cringe a lot more if almost any other regular forward on the Maple Leafs was injured. And Matthew, if he played the role that you described, if he was fourth line, chipping pucks in, hammering bodies, and he played 10 minutes a night, that'd be great. I don't want to see him on the power play. I don't want to see him playing 17 minutes a night. And I don't want to see him playing way more than JVR, way more than Connor Brown, even strength. And yet he does. So I worry that that's not the right role for him. And I even worry that this is the only North American team he knows. You've played with Europeans before and you're like, hey, that guy will be back. Where would he go? He likes it here. He might come back on a 1-year deal at about the same amount of money. Like, why not at age 32? And a lot of Leaf fans are ready to say sayonara, and he may be back.
The worst case scenario for Leo Komarov in general is that he does leave, because he's one of those guys when you go to a new place, maybe doesn't know your value. You don't have, you know, being comfortable, and he certainly is comfortable here, and he has a coach that really values him and plays him a lot. So, you know, I don't think anywhere else he would probably get those numbers unless someone overpaid and then they kind of force you, and that comes back into slotting and slotting guys in the wrong because you pay them a little too much. So I think this is the perfect spot for him. Again, we could say the same thing about Zach Hyman, right? We say that a lot, that he's on a top line, and on most teams he'd probably be a third line grinding guy, but he brings value to that line. He's first on the forecheck. He's the guy that's doing the dirty work, and I think that's the same thing for Leo Komarov. Should he be on the power? Like, should he probably get as many minutes as he does? Probably not. But that's what the coach values, and that's where he sees that he brings that fit, and he sees him every single day, and knows what he brings to that table. So I'm okay with the minutes that he plays, only because I know that he plays hard, and I know how valuable it is, especially once they come playoff time.
With Matthew Barnamy talking Leafs, one guy that is a secondary performer and is performing in his job, and what a performance last night! And I think he needs a tip of the cap is Curtis McElhinney. He seemed to be in perfect form last night. Wherever the puck was going, he seemed to be tracking it perfectly. I felt bad for him that he was out there with tired penalty killers when the second goal was scored, but his numbers are stellar. He's had an excellent year.
He's been very good for them, and you look, because you need to be able to give your number one guy some rest going into the playoffs. Unfortunately, you don't want it when he's injured. You want him to be totally healthy, but you also have to be able to, you know, count on, and I think these guys fully believe in McElhinney and what he brings to the table. It's a hard job being a backup goaltender. I mean, I coached in the OHL for a little bit. I never even got to know my backup goaltender's name because you always live and die with your number one. But certainly they are valuable. They come in, and he's done nothing but great things for this Toronto Maple Leaf team. I never was really a believer in him till watching this year, and for the most part, he's given them a chance every single time. And for a team that's only won about 30 games in a lot of years in playing in Buffalo, he gave them that chance yesterday. They responded, and huge congrats to him.